Good morning. This is Kim Mooney with Practically Dash Dying, interviewing at KGNU for, let's see what time it is or what day it is. We are having an ice storm right now. So I'm really grateful that we're able to be in here and talking to a really important author who's written a book called Overcoming the Fear of Death. This is Kelvin Chin. Good morning, Kelvin.
Good morning, Kim.
How could you talk a little bit about just the evolution of the book? When did you write it, and how did you even decide to write it? Actually, start with your history around this. Why are you interested in this topic?
Sure. Yeah, I'll weave that all together. Yeah. Well, first of all, I've been helping people with death and dying for over 30 years now. It really got started, my interest in desire to help people, really it started when my mom passed away about 35 years ago or so, when I was at the end of my law school education. So it was my third year of law school. And quite frankly, it really blew me away. It was one of those very traumatic experiences. She died very quickly. Her illness was so advanced, her cancer was so advanced at the time that she was totally asymptomatic, but she died very quickly. So it was a shock to everybody, and I was so close with her, and it just psycho-emotionally was very traumatic for me. I had already been meditating for 10 years at that point, so I already had a very, you know, good inner support system in a sense, but and tool and technique, but the traumatic experience of my mom, just emotionally traumatic, dying so quickly, was really what kickstarted me. So I started helping people little by little, talking to people, and that was really the genesis of this whole interest.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you one question, because this comes up a lot in Boulder. How did or didn't having a meditation practice affect your ability to be present with your mother and your ability to deal with your grief?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a good question. Well, it definitely helped me. And at the same time, what the answer I'm going to give you is kind of not mutually exclusive to each other. There's like a couple of parts to it, because it absolutely helped me deal with the stress and be more present with my mom. At the same time, I was also in a state of denial about my mom dying, because she was going so quickly. It was not like my dad died many, many decades later. My dad died, and he had cancer, and it went into remission for a couple of years, and it came back, and we all knew when it came back that he probably had about a year left. So there was a very long runway for us to kind of resolve things, get things in order, not just business-wise, but emotionally. Whereas with my mom, she was gone in a matter of a few short months, very short months. Mm-hmm. And so I was in a state of denial, even though I was meditating.
Mm-hmm.
So my point is that in my work, what I found is that meditation is a critical part of helping to, as I'm sure many of your listeners know who meditate, it's a critical tool and technique to turn on the opposite of the fight or flight response.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the adrenaline, the cortisol that runs through our system when we when the proverbial saber-toothed tiger was at our door, 200,000, not proverbial but literal, saber-toothed tiger was at our door 200,000 years ago. You either run or you fight it, and it's a survival thing. But you know, it kicks on when we're in traffic jams or when we're in long lines at the supermarket or something, and that's not a good thing. So it triggers way too often in our nervous systems now in our culture, the way it is throughout the world. And so meditation is what I call the turning on of the opposite switch, the mm-hmm. opposite of the fight or flight. Well, that's a critical component to dealing with these sorts of, you know, death and dying, traumatic life experiences and challenges. However, the other critical component is understanding what's going on. Not only understanding the stages of dying, if it's a loved one like my mom that she was going through, which I did not understand. I was clueless.
Mm-hmm.
It was my first real experience. It was my first experience going through the death of a loved one. I mean, my I had other loved ones who died, but, you know, uncles and grandparents sort of thing, but I was never there, really. You know, I was just there to see them in their hospital bed once, maybe, and then they died, you know. It wasn't like I was going to see my mom on a regular basis in this situation. And I did not understand the stages of dying.
Mm-hmm.
I had not wrapped my mind around death and, you know, how I thought about death in a really more deep way than just, okay, people die, you know. And so I started doing that, and that's what I found really worked for me and helped me help other people was marrying up the two, the understanding about what's going on, as well as the helping the individual neurophysiologically deal with their own triggering of their fight or flight and helping them turn on the opposite switch, this process of turning within through meditation or whatever works for people. But I teach meditation, as you know.
So it sounds like, to reframe in my language, it would be that you're helping people create the ground to handle any kind of an experience, and then you're giving them the information to understand what they will be dealing with.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I found that they both need to go hand in hand in order to fully deal with whether it's the grief, in the sense of my case, for example, the loss of a loved one, the grief recovery process, or whether it's one's own understanding and dealing with one's own fears about death or concerns about one's own death and dying.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, and you know, it sounds like most people who are doing death and dying work, it came out of your hide. I think a lot of us are motivated by something that affects us so deeply. So it sounds to me also like these are the things that went into your four main belief systems, which are a big part of your book. So can you talk a little bit about how your history helped you develop those and what they are more fully? Because this was very significant when I looked through your book.
Right, yeah. So what happened was, so back when I was in law school, you know, I was going to law school, and it was my third year, which is difficult enough. And then my mom was going through this very quick dying and then death process that she went through, and that we all went through with her, in a sense. And I had a part-time job, and if you had seen me walking around, you would have had no idea that I was going through what I was going through internally, because, you know, we all have a good handle on masking things. We worldwide, we can mask things. People don't know exactly what is going on inside us often, and we can hide things. And so I was, you know, operating, quote unquote, you know, in my external daily life fine, but when I would go and sit and meditate, it would be enough for me to open up to myself and relax enough, in a sense, to really what's going on inside me, mm-hmm. that I would cry. And I went through a process there of really releasing and kind of getting a handle on the stress that I was under, that I was kind of in a sense of denial about, mm-hmm. quite frankly. So that was the first stage. And then I started talking to people more about it. And what happened was, you know how you walk around and people ask you how you're doing and you don't want to get into it, and you just say, oh, I'm doing fine, great, you know, whatever, I'm doing okay. And then you move on. Well, I started actually answering people's questions. They'd say, well, how you doing? And I didn't get into it a lot of detail. I would just say, well, I'm doing fine, but my mom just passed away. I just mention it. And mm-hmm. as soon as just a small mention like that, it would like open up the floodgates of conversation with people, and then they'd say, whoa, my grandfather just passed away, and I'm really still blown away by it. Or my brother was just in a accident, you know, a mountain climbing accident or something. And just stuff people would just reveal, you know, self-disclosure, as you know, Kim does that. And I started having conversation. I started seeing what helped people, what worked, what didn't work. It was really trial and error. And like you say, I kind of get into this just from trial by fire, so to speak, just kind of, you know, I've been on the other side, you know, the proverbial dark side, mm-hmm. dealing with my own stuff about my mom's death and dying. So I started helping other people. And little by little, over the last 30, 35 years, I've been doing this on the side, nights and weekends. And then I started this foundation. And the way the four belief systems, to your specific question, came about was in those conversations with people, I started noticing that a lot of people would default to their religious and cultural beliefs mm-hmm. about death and dying, which is natural. And then they would get into arguments with each other or disagreements with each other about various points. I mean, Buddhists don't even agree amongst themselves about the various forms of Buddhism. So there's all these different points of potential disagreement. So I thought, how can we have conversation about death and dying with less disagreement, more openness, therefore promoting more discussion and thinking about this? Mm-hmm. Not to persuade people so much, like most people were doing, I found, but have conversation and thought about this. So I came up with these four beliefs. And just in a nutshell, and we can get into them in more detail, but very quickly, the four beliefs are, the first one is the physical science belief. And these four beliefs really underlie all the cultural and religious beliefs out there in the world. So the first one is the physical science belief. My body dies, my mind dies, that's it, one lifetime, everything shuts off when I die. That's the first belief system. It was my dad's belief system. Second belief system, my body dies, my mind continues, some form of afterlife, but there's fear associated with it from who knows what source, but there's fear. So I call it the fear of continued existence. That's the second belief system. Third belief system, belief in an afterlife, but no fear after the body dies. Fourth belief system, body dies, mind continues, mind's conscious, can make choices, can choose to come back in another body if it wants to, takes on another lifetime. So it's the idea of past lives, future lives, reincarnation. Those are the four beliefs.
Wow. Hey, I want to remind people that this is Kim Mooney from Practically Dying, working with Calvin Chin on his book, Overcoming the Fear of Death and the Practices. We're broadcasting from KGNU, and we're really glad to have you with us this morning. I have a question about these four belief systems. It sounds like what you do is you give people the opportunity to explore something more than they may have learned from someone else or picked up from the culture. How much does that work? How many times when you're working with people, do individuals actually say, oh, that's not really what I believe. This resonates more with me.
Yeah, so it's a good question because very often, and I've worked with people from over 20 countries, every religion, every single religion on the planet, Europe, Asia, Africa, all over the world, Latin America and so forth, people have called me and we've discussed these four belief systems. And very often, what you just described happens. They'll say, my belief is X. And then they'll say, but, and then they'll go into something and say something. I'll give you an example that indicates to me, and I shine a light on it for them, that their belief system is actually a little bit different from what they thought it was. So this conversation happens a lot. I'll give you a sample. So people will often call me, and many people will say, I have the first belief system. After I've laid out what the four belief systems are, I'll ask them and I'll say, look, we're going to look at this through your lens, through your belief lens. I'm not here to tell you that you should think through my belief lens. I'm not here to convince you that my belief is the quote-unquote right belief. Mm-hmm. I'm here to help you, regardless of what your belief is, to help you look through your lens and look through it a little bit more clearly, and let's see if we can reduce, potentially eliminate your fear of death through your lens. So I lay out the four beliefs, and I say, okay, where do you fall? Very often people will say, well, I have the first belief, where body dies, mind shuts off. Mm-hmm. Mind is connected to the brain. That's the first belief system. Mind shuts off. I have one life. That's it. And then they'll say, but I say, well, okay, what's your fear? And they say, well, I'm afraid of non-existence after that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very, I hear this very, very often. And I'll say, okay, well, let's talk about this. Let's talk about, first of all, the first belief system. And then we'll talk about what you just described as fear of non-existence. Well, first of all, let's talk about what fear is. Fear is the emotion caused by the anticipation of unhappiness.
Mm-hmm.
The emotion caused by the anticipation of unhappiness. So, if you have the first belief system, your belief is, like my dad, your belief is when your body dies, your mind is going to shut off completely. You're going to have no experience. And if that's the case, you're not going to have happiness or unhappiness, for that matter, after your body dies, if you really have the first belief system. So it's actually illogical for you to have any fear of death. You may have other fears.
Mm-hmm.
You may have other fears. You may have the fear of process of dying before you die and so forth, which I talk about with people. But that's not the fear of death. So the first thing I do is I point out that get clarity for them that their fear is not the fear of death if they really do have the first belief system. Because if they do have the first belief system, then they should live their life like my dad did and live it fully in the present. And that's it. And as my dad did, he did not have a fear of death, and he lived his life fully in the present. And that's the way people who have the first belief system should live their lives.
Mm.
So everything I do, by the way, Kim, is all about helping people, regardless of what their belief system is, live life more fully in the present, because that's where we are, and that's where we should be enjoying and living in life and having good relationships with people and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about that.
Well,
So then I get into the fear of non-existence with the person, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what's that? And point out that really this person has more of a, what I call a hybrid. They may think they have part of a first belief system, but they also have the second belief system, or maybe have fully the second belief system once we have discussed it further. Because the fear of continued existence is another way of framing it is the fear of non-existence, because they're afraid of not knowing what's going to happen mm-hmm. after they die, which I also point out to people is, hey, that's a normal reaction, because nobody knows for sure until you actually die.
Mm-hmm. You know, what strikes me is when you talked about unconscious cultural beliefs, that partly what you're doing simply by the way you do it, the listening and the provocative questions, is in itself an education. And in some ways, it's sort of a healing from learning unconsciously, because you're asking them to learn consciously. So even the way you present things is a brand new concept and paradigm for people.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's
interesting.
Yeah, interesting. You're right.
I wanted to ask you before we move on, because I really want to talk about also your myths about grief. I had read a review on Amazon about a man that you had really helped, and I would like our listeners to hear about this story. Can you remember? Can you talk about that?
Oh, yeah. So just this, recently on my Amazon book page, I got a review from somebody, obviously, who had read my book. And I had not been in touch with him for, a long time. And evidently it worked. You know, the book helped, and what I had discussed with him helped, and his understanding about death and dying through the lens, as you said, through a little more of a conscious thinking lens, really seemed to help. And I actually have a printout of it here. Let me just read a little bit. I won't read the whole thing because it's fairly long. But I'll just highlight a few things. He said he grew up in a very strict Christian home, heard thousands of hours of hellfire and brimstone-style preaching growing up, and many nights he'd lie in bed terrified about when he died and was worried about being judged and so forth. And then he went through an evolution or a change in his belief system after a year or two in college. He kind of moved away from organized religion, but he still thought about death and dying and his spirituality for many, many years. He's in his mid-30s now. And then he met with me via the phone first. It's interesting. He just literally Googled the fear of death, those three words. And I came up in the Google search result. I'm on the first page, one of the top Google search results. And so he connected me via my website by Googling fear of death. And we had this sort of conversation that you and I just kind of discussed. And he's at the point now, again, reinforced, he said, after reading my book, where he's at the point where when the fear of death starts to creep in, he says, quote, forget about it. He just doesn't let himself dwell on it anymore because he now understands more clearly how irrational it is and how much it robs him of enjoying living in the present mm-hmm. moment of his life. And so he talks more in this review about having for decades gone to lectures and read and watched the YouTube videos and sought medical help of course as well because it was so extreme for him. But anyway, he feels like it's changed his life and he's more optimistic about the future. And he said, my attitude about death now is that whatever happens, I'll be able to handle it.
Mm-hmm.
The relief I've felt has been nothing short of a miracle.
Oh, wow.
So it's really a powerful, and I read this and I went, wow, this is so powerful, and it was so obviously affirming for me. And, it was almost as if I had written it, what I would like mm-hmm. to see happen with somebody. And not only that, but what the process that he went through of mm-hmm. self, it was a self-realization process, mm-hmm. really, a form of self-realization for himself, revealing to himself. And I just facilitated that. You know, I didn't tell him this is the way you should think. I gave him seed thoughts, and I gave him perspectives, and as you said, I got him a little bit more conscious
mm-hmm.
about his thinking process in a different way, and he had a self-realization within himself about death and dying, and he came to terms with it in his own way, in a way that would be different. I would mm-hmm. I would not have articulated it all in the way that he did, because
right.
it was his articulation, and right. that's the goal of my work, is to get people to a place where they have their own self-realization. It cannot be mine that I foist on them. It has to be within each of us.
Absolutely.
Because if you think about it, what's more intimate than our own death?
No,
thinking about our own
I agree
death?
With you. So, you know, we could talk about this for a lot longer, but we are actually down to where we have about 4.5 minutes left, and I really want to have people to have time at the end to know how to contact you. But I also really want to know a little bit about the myths of grief, or the
sure.
stages of grief.
Sure, real quick. I'll just list them very quickly. But, you know, there's basically 6 major myths, and there's all sorts of sub-myths, but there's a lot of myths about grief and how to deal with grief. And I'll just list them, the 6 major myths. Number one, don't feel badly.
Mm-hmm.
You hear that all the time. People mm-hmm. say, well, don't feel bad about that.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, replace the loss.
Mm.
3, grieve alone. 4, be strong. 5, keep busy. You hear that all the time. Just keep busy. 6, time heals all wounds.
Mm.
Just give it some time.
Mm-hmm.
Just give yourself time. You hear that all the time, and people, you hear these 6 myths all the time. They may have an immediate effect of making the person feel a little bit relieved for a split second or a short while or a day or a few hours, but the grief comes screaming back again, and you really need to deal with the process of recovering from the grief, and I help people work through that. Through an actual process, from week to week and so forth. So those are the common myths about grief. And the other thing that I always like to point out about grief is, you know, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, I have a quote from her in my book. So I think very, very highly of her. At the same time, she herself talks about the myths, the stages of grief that she laid out in the early 70s. She talks about it. She talked about that in her first book. In her third book, I think it's her third book, she talks about that as her biggest grief. That people have taken those those stages of grief to be pillars of cement,
mm-hmm.
and she never meant them to be that.
Mm-hmm.
She says. So that's another thing that's still being taught out there in schools. That you know, the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross stages of grief. Those are merely signposts for people to look for. Sometimes they're not there. They're not there meant to be there all the time.
And you know what I have to say, working in this field for 25 years, it's the only field that I can think of where one 40-year-old theory is still running the show. There's so much that's happened after that. So, yeah. We only have 2 minutes left. Could you talk a little bit about, or first of all, could you give us your website and tell us how we can get a hold of you?
Sure. The name of the website is overcomingthefearofdeath.org. So it's nonprofit, so that's why it's a .org. But it's just the word spelled out, overcomingthefearofdeath.org. And people can contact me there through the contact page. And my meditation website is turningwithin.org. And you can connect to the two nonprofit websites through the footer page. Footer of each page has a link to the other page. So if you can't remember one or the other, you just go to the bottom of any page and you can link to the other website.
And also there will be listings there of kinds of workshops that you do and the different ways that you work with people. So they can get all the information about what may be coming up and how to contact you and how to work with you on those websites, correct?
That's correct. And the other thing I really want to mention is if there's any hospice workers out there, hospices, people listening, I have a donor who's donating a book to any hospice who wants a free copy of my book.
Mm.
So they should send me, you know, go to my website, send me a message.
Great. This is a really good place to say that. This community radio station is very well listened to and really is a big asset, really a community resource. So I'm sure you'll get at least one call. So I want to close by saying thank you very much. Your work sounds fascinating. I can tell that it comes out of your hide, which is really precious. And blessings and good luck.
Thank you so much, Kim. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. This is Kim Mooney from practically-dying.com. And we're broadcasting from KGNU, and everybody take really good care and appreciate every day.